is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Peace and Justice Radio. Hey, friends. Peace and justice, it's hard to believe. It's hard to understand sometimes. Today I want to talk to you about the psychology of tyranny. What makes for tyranny? What makes people become tyrants? What makes groups become tyrannical? Here's a belief, you know. The belief is that power corrupts. That once a person has power, they're going to be corrupted. The other belief is that absolute power is even more corruptive. We're going to examine that today. I mean, think of the inhumanity and atrocities that are burned into your memory. Jewish men, women, and children being herded into gas chambers, you know, during the Second World War. Entire villages destroyed by gangs in Rwanda. Systematic use of rape and destruction in communities, and it's being called ethnic cleansing in the Balkans. The massacre at My Lai in South Vietnam. Or the abuse of Iraqi prisoners in Abu Ghraib. The carnage of suicide bombers everywhere now. What makes people so brutal? Are all brutal people mentally ill? It would seem to make sense. What makes a person do that? They must be crazy. Are they products of dysfunctional families? Is that it? Or even worse, is it that any one of us are capable of brutality given certain circumstances? That it's in every one of us? And that we all have this capacity. This is what we're going to look at today. I want to look at brutality. I want to look at tyrants in different forms. I want to do it. I want to see what is it about us that makes us be so horrible to our fellow people, fellow humans. How can apparently civilized and decent people perpetuate such appalling acts? One psychologist, a long time ago, 1961, Hannah Arendt, A-R-E-N-D-T, wanted to study evil. So she wanted to study it. So where did she go? She focused her attention on the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was one of the chief architects of the Holocaust. She expected to find a perverted and sadistic personality, because that's what everybody said. I mean, if you're going to be a Nazi and you're going to be doing the Holocaust and you're wiping people out and killing people and burning people and doing all those horrors, you must be perverted and sadistic, right? Instead, she found him to be remarkably ordinary. At that time, Hannah Arendt used a phrase about Eichmann that has stuck with us for 40 years. She called it the banality of evil. Banality of evil, meaning the commonplace evil. How common it is. So this is what I decided we'd look at today, because how confusing it must be for us to see man's destructiveness. How could they be? It suggested that ordinary people can do really ordinary things, evil things, given the situation. In the 1950s, Mustafa Sharif, a Turkish psychologist, studied normal schoolboys. Here's an interesting experiment. Now, they had these normal schoolboys who showed no sign of any emotional disturbance, frustration, or any kind of criminality towards each other, none of that stuff. Then he broke these boys into smaller groups, and then forced them to compete for scarce resources. There was a certain amount of food that was available. This is, of course, in Turkey. And there was a certain amount of food available, and certain ones would get more food than others. Well, That's all you needed. Because in the attempt to compete for the scarce resources, certain of the groups became cruel and aggressive. Of course, the larger and older groups. Cruel and aggressive. I mean, so cruel and so aggressive. Like, you know, sometimes you see if an eagle has three babies, the older one is going to kill the baby one because it's got scarce resources, mama's food, you know? And so what we'll do very often, the older baby eagle will throw the baby eagle out of a nest. Throw it out. Kill it. Does this is what happens when there are scarce resources? Is that what creates evil? Well, no. I mean, because we could look at a lot of places where resources aren't scarce, and we find evil existing. Even more striking was a study at Yale University, the Yale University study in the early 60s. Now, this one was amazing. They took ordinary, well-adjusted students who had passed psychological tests to prove that they were well-adjusted, right? They weren't taking any chances, so they took only the cream of the crop. And they said, you're going to be a teacher of somebody, and here's the way you're going to teach. We're trying a new experiment, and in this new experiment, we're going to try to train memory. And what we're going to do is we're going to put you on one side of a wall, and a glass, there's going to be a glass between you, and you're going to see on the other side of the wall will be somebody who's trying to memorize something. Now, if they get it wrong, you give them a shock, an electric shock with 300 volts. And this way, we're trying to prove that they're going to remember better. If they get it wrong twice, you give them a higher voltage shock. Now, of course, in this experiment, there was no electricity being delivered, just the illusion of electricity being delivered, and the person on the other side of the blind made believe they were being shocked. They really weren't being shocked, you see? So it was all to see whether or not what would happen to a person when the power was put in their hands. So they had these students who were really well-adjusted students delivering these electric shocks to these people on the other side. And a funny thing happened. They started doing it. They just enjoyed the shock. You could see something come over them when they enjoyed the shock. As they were shocking the student, the person learning, and the person made a mistake, zips. They give them a zits. Now, of course, the leader said to them, you must do this for the experiment, but they didn't object to it in any way. And then the person on the other side of the experiment, the person receiving the shock, they played a kind of game with it, because, of course, they weren't really being shocked. But they would say things like, oh, don't shock me, I have to go to the bathroom. Zzz, give them a shock anyway. And they would find even one person made believe they were having a heart attack. They said, oh, I'm having a heart attack. But the rule was you got to give them a shock if they do this, if they don't get it right. And zit, you got them the shock. Once the person had the power of that voltage regulator in their hands, they tended to get carried away with it. So this led to quite an interesting theory. You know, and of course they were instructed to be merciless in the way they were giving the shock, but so what, you're being instructed? If you're being instructed to hurt people, does that mean you hurt them? Well, according to this, once given the power, these students all became conscienceless. Shockers. They did not refuse to deliver the shock. So what's this telling us about this kind of brutality? What's it telling us about this kind of tyranny? What's it telling us about the spirit of people? Well, okay. They took this experiment and they tried to replicate it. And they did it many years later, and they did it at BBC. And what they did was they experimented there. We're trying to make it different, you know. And they found similar kind of results. Similar kind of results. This is telling us something, my friends. In a Stanford prison experiment, here's another one. Stanford University, not Stanford Prison, 1971. They made a prison. And they told some of the people, students again, graduate students, Some of you are guards, some of you are prisoners. And they built a fake prison. And they said, now you guards, you have to discipline these prisoners to do what they're supposed to do. And the prisoners were told, well, you know, you have to use your own judgment as to how far you can go. But, you know, you're prisoners and you're going to act like prisoners, so whatever you do, it's, you know, you're going to be behind bars and the guards are going to have power. By the sixth day, the guards had become so brutal, given the power of what they had. You know, they had everything from lightning rods to sticks to, you know, whatever they could do. You know, these electric rods. Anything they wanted, they became so brutal. These people with this power became so brutal that they had to stop the experiment. After 6 days, they said, stop it, you're out of hand. Okay. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We're trying to understand, what is it? Is it just that you give somebody power and they use it? Or is it that wherever there's a group of people with similar power, they will use this power in a destructive way? Here's a thought, you know, people with a cause. If you give people a cause, give them something they believe in, tell them something that they're right and the other people are wrong. Let's say Christianity, right? Early Christianity, 100 AD, boom. Right? The marches, they went through and they were going to convert everybody. They're going to get all the people who were heathens. Brutal. 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 Burning people at the stake, the heretics, right? Brutal stuff. Behind a belief that you are just and right. And I tell you something, friends, sometimes I even listen to the left and I hear them saying that they're right. When they're going to go on their marches, and I see this kind of almost glee, frenzy of, I'm ready to rebel, I'm ready, like riots, you know, the riots and what's. How did that happen? How did people become so brutal? You know, were they justified, or was it that something about the human mind, when it believes that it has a just cause, gets out of control? Watch out for just causes. Watch out for any gang that represents a just cause. Because they are sometimes limitless. But it turns out that there's more than just one thing that makes a gang exercise limitless power. There has to be a leader. There has to be somebody carrying the banner, saying, you know, they've got weapons of mass destruction and we have to march in there because they are going to eat your babies. And you have to convince them that those people there with the beards, you know, they're going to do it to you, and you have to be ready to do it. You have to be restless. You have to be part of a crowd that is sitting there almost waiting for an enemy. Because if you're bored, you're very easy to turn into an army. See, if your life is kind of meaningless, if you're going along following your boss who's telling you to do certain things in your 9-to-5 job, you're ready to riot. Look at the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, what did those guys do for a living, you know, underneath those sheets? But give them the sheets and give them the power and give them the burning cross and give them a right to say you are doing racial cleansing. You know, and they could be extremely brutal, of course. Of course. So, Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. I'm talking about tyranny, and I want you to understand tyranny because, as far as I'm concerned, everything you understand makes you a kinder person. Everything that you do makes you a more positive mind if you could understand. Understand the tyrants. You know, do we have a tyrant who's the head of Iraq, and was it just him, that tyrant? Or was it the head of Iraq and everybody who kind of worked with him? Was there a group there that were doing tyrannical things? Because certainly there are certain things that Saddam Hussein did that were really horrendous. But was he alone? Look at Haiti. Do we have one leader who is creating most of the inhuman things that go on there? Or do you have a situation where you have a group of people who feel the power of being associated to a leader, and from that powerful place, they could do things to people that are horrendous, horrendous. Some of the worst abuses I've ever seen in my life have been in Haiti. And you look at these people and you wonder, you say, look, when you were a kid, these men used to march into your house and they used to rape your mother. They used to beat your father. Now you've become a policeman and you're doing just what they did. How could you do that? This is what happens with power. This is what happens. But now, you know, so here comes the question. Is it just from the frustrated? Is it the frustrated only who are capable of being brutal? No, 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 my friends. Watch out. It's a certain set of mental things that happen. It's a certain thing that happens. Not just frustrated people. In another experiment, they recreated this prisoner thing. And they want to re-examine this because the first belief was that individuals lose their capacity for intellectual and moral judgment in groups, period. That once a person gets into a group, they lose their capacity for moral judgment because it's a group mind. That's a question. The second hypothesis is that there's an inevitable impetus for people to act tyrannically once they are put in groups and given power. Once you put people in a group and you give them power, like an army, you know, they have a natural tendency to act tyrannically. That's a hypothesis. So now we have to figure out if that's true or not. One of the things they did was they reconnected this kind of prison experiment. They did the prison experiment, and they did it in a really interesting way. They did it differently. Unlike the first one, they just didn't say to the kids, here, now you have power, you got to control the other people. No, they let you have your individuality. They said, you use your force as you want to use your force. You see, and it's really up to you. It's up to your individual. You don't have to use force. There's not going to be a group mind. Well, this was a very interesting experiment because the guards, the one who were playing the guards, some of them wanted to use force and some didn't. So the ones who didn't want to use force fought against the ones who wanted to use force. And they fought with them. They didn't fight with them physically, but they resisted them. What happened? What do you think happened? Well, the prisoners, seeing the discord, decided to exploit the discord, and they took over the prison. They rebelled, and they took over the prison. Now, those, because of the discord, because of the resistance of certain people to use force, and they were being fought by the people who wanted to use force, the prisoners took over the prison. What was the resolution? The guys who didn't want to use the force said, we got to take our prison back. And they said, we have to show a unified front. And so what they did was they put on masks of tyranny. They actually put on sunglasses. They wore uniforms. They went to look alike because they realized that what was happening was they were being exploited for their differences. And they marched in and retook the prisons, and then they all acted in harmony. And they all became brutal. Interesting, right? I mean, it's fascinating. It's fascinating the way the human mind works. It's almost like there's a balance that has to take place. And you've all my friends, been either in a situation where you've been asked to be brutal in certain ways, and you've been challenged. Your integrity has been challenged. Like, let's say you work for a credit card company. Let's say you work for an advertising agency. Let's say you work for one of the companies that dispense drugs. Many opportunities. Let's say you work for a company, a service company, that takes insurance. And you have to be, you know, a little unfair. Or let's say you are one of those insurance companies who want to deny, and your job is to deny claims. What happens when you get in that moral dilemma? What do you do? Do you just say, I'm going to take the high road and you don't have a job? You know, is that one way? So you don't feed your baby, so you take the high road? Or do you find some way of justifying it? What happens once you get in the mind of people, the group of people, who believe that it's okay to be brutal. Made references to it before 1969. Down in Wall Street, I was involved in the watching the high hats, the hard hats, the people who are the construction workers, are looking down at the hippies marching through Wall Street protesting the war. Now, there I am. I'm still a student. I was working in Wall Street, but I'm looking, and there's the hippies, and those are my brothers. I want to march with them. And here's the guys who are the construction workers, and what the construction workers are doing is they throw down construction material into the crowd of hippies who are marching. So you could see them perched on top of the buildings, and they throw stuff down, and they start killing a little at a time. And they throw in the materials against the marchers. So not the police. But now the brutality comes in the form of hard hats. Right? Of the people, the construction workers. And here's this thing now you're reading in the news that people are killed. Marching. By who? By the construction workers. So I called a meeting, and I had a meeting with construction workers and with the hippies. And we tried to sat them down at a table, which I did. And you never heard this story before? You're looking at me. And one of the things that I did when I interviewed the hard hats was I said, why? And they said, because what they represent, meaning the hippies, they represent that they're saying our country is wrong. And if they're saying our country is wrong, then everything I believe is wrong. So I have to do away with them. Because if they're saying our country is wrong, then my family is wrong, then my parents are wrong. And so to protect my belief, this is what the bottom line was, they never really said it, to protect my belief in mom and apple pie, I have to destroy those other people. Such thinking, such things capable of the mind. We have a new science, a brain imaging science. There's a new science that's developed over the last few years that allows you, we talked about it yesterday with happiness, to picture what happens inside the human brain during certain things. So now, you know, they could have people having sex, and they could look at different parts of the brain and seeing what parts heat up and what parts cool down. And they've determined that happiness is a certain combination and sadness is a certain combination. They looked at brutality, and they wanted to see what happens to people in their mind when they execute brutality. And they found it triggers the pleasure center in men, especially in men. That men who see brutality or act in a brutal way or a part of brutality have some pleasure response to it. Now, this is especially if the man could rationalize to himself that the brutality is justified. Then he could either create it or observe it and believe it's right. Women, on the other hand, did not have this. If they thought that the thing was justified, they were reluctant to use it, to use the power to be brutal. Very few women, some exception, ever really exercise brutality. Very few, except the school I went to when I was a kid. I mean, we had teachers with rulers. Boy, it seemed like they really enjoyed it, hitting the kids. What happens? What happens when you give a teacher a ruler, a yardstick, and you say, keep these kids in control? Do you think that teacher is really thinking, well, if I give Johnny a small whack, he's going to be a much better student in the long run? Absolutely not. They would haul off. They'd have murder on their faces. Right? Give them the power. Let them believe in justice. And in my case, it was a religious school. They thought they were working for God. Brutal people. Doesn't exist anymore. No more. Nowadays, you're too accountable. You can't get away with beating up on kids too easily. Unless you're really isolated. Somehow somebody's going to notice it. Somehow somebody's going to get stopped. But other countries, you can walk into other countries all you want, do whatever you want. You could. Mass murderers are out there. So remember, my friends, when it comes to ordinary men and women, there's usually a collaboration for evil. Now, one collaboration happens when when somebody is demonizing somebody, or somebody is humiliating somebody. Let's say, for example, you're in a group of people, and somebody's leaving the firm, and somebody else is humiliating them, talking about them, saying bad things. If you passively allow that humiliation to take place, you're part of the gang. See, this is the mental set. Someone who does something as almost benign as humiliation compared to brutality, they have to get an okay from their peers. And if you say nothing about something that takes place, if there is someone you believe is a good person and they are being harmed psychologically, emotionally by another person, and you say, well, I won't say anything, right? It's as good as joining. Because that passivity will lead you to be, is kind of encouraging this thing to happen. So everybody is a part of it. The person who watches it is a part of the brutality. The person who's the observer. I often wondered about the Swiss. You know, I think about them. I mean, it's not racism on my part, but you know, you say I'm going to be a neutral country. How do you be neutral during the Second World War? How could you be neutral? How did you do it? What did you do with your mind? You know, where did you put it that said, I'll be neutral? You know, how can you maintain that position in your life? It means you're a part of it. Wherever you're neutral, you're a part of it. But I'm not saying that you should automatically be somebody who jumps at every opportunity to oppose everything, because some of the stuff you're opposing might be right in its own kind of way. Just get the information. Stay awake. Get involved. You know? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In conclusion, I'm saying to you that it takes a whole series of events that lead to uncovering of evil spirit. Passive acknowledgement, letting things happen. A tyranny, a tyrant is right up on top. Some kind of a just cause is another part of the ingredient. And then there's going to be this group of frustrated, bored people who are going to create an army for the tyrant to execute what the tyrant wants to do. And all of that becomes a part of it as they find their victims. And so we, my friends, in our own passivity at times, are part of it. And we've got to recognize that part. And that's why we have WBAI, the radio station, because this radio station at least keeps the voice active. We're going to take a short break. This is Armand DeMille. It is well near, but not exactly 1:30 here on WBAI. When I come back, I'm going to be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. I want to hear about your own personal experience with being brutal, not your own experience of being brutalized. I want to know if it ever tapped into you. Do you ever remember, you know, doing something brutal? Did you ever remember losing control in a way? That's what I'd really like to hear. It's easy enough to get many of you standing on a bandwagon talking about brutal people, because everybody does that. But I'd like to hear about you, my friends. Maybe you could help me. So since this is a heavy subject, I want to bring you something else. David Kenny, who does a program on WBAI called Everything Old is New Again, 7 p.m. on Sunday night, 7 to 9, I believe, sent out an announcement that he's playing a few of the old artists that I knew really well, and some of them, one of them is Anita O'Day. He'll be playing some stuff by Anita O'Day, which is really wonderful. Cal Jada he's bringing back, and quite a few others, so I recommend you tune in. One of our programs, really special. It's a music program on Sunday evenings. But he kind of brought up this idea of Anita O'Day, and he and I had a little exchange, so I went hunting. And I remember who Anita O'Day was. Anita O'Day originally sang with Gene Krupa Band. I mean, she was there. She worked with Gene Krupa, you know, the drummer. And so I went out to get the recording of Sing, Sing, Sing by Anita O'Day to present for you. So here it is. 3 minutes, stay with us, because when the calls come in, it's going to be wild. But I want to take a little break with you and present this kind of magnificent one recording where her voice, if you would watch Anita O'Day sing, and when I was a kid, I used to sit at her feet, you could see her singing the way she would use a microphone was just fantastic. It's 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. And so Anita O'Day, when she would sing, she would use her mouth past the microphone, almost as if she was creating air, and then she was a scatter. Now, Anita O'Day had the ability to scat and was part of the jazz singers. There were two major ones, Ella Fitzgerald and Anita O'Day. Ella Fitzgerald, if you wanted to hear something with a lot of heart. Anita O'Day for the technical perfection of being a jazz singer. I want you to hear it. I want to share it with you today, my friends. It's really great. Scatting is where you take your voice and you use it in place of an instrument. So you'll hear her scatting, meaning she's sounding like an instrument. So when she says shooby-dooby-dooby, she's thinking trumpet, you know, tenor saxophone, stuff like that. So listen on. Tune in with me. It's big, but it's beautiful. And here we go.
Everybody start to sing. Shoo shoo ba doo ba doo 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 doo. Now you're singing with a swing. Swing, 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 swing. Everybody start to swing. Doo 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 doo. Now you're swinging while you sing. When the music goes around, everybody goes to town. About here's something you should know. Cool it, baby, check it slow. Sing, sing, sing. Everybody start to sing. Sha-ba-da-ba-da-da-da-da-da. Now you're singing with a swing.
Day. That's a positive use of aggression. Boy, when you could punch it out like that for everybody there, and Benny Goodman, Gene Krupa, Anita O'Day, you know, just power it out. not a bad idea. Hey, we're talking about your own brutality. We're talking about the psychology of tyranny, and we're talking about what makes people act in cruel and inhuman ways. And what we're saying is the banality of evil, as the phrase was put, is that it seems to be commonplace and available. It seems to be so available. I mean, you know, you must have gotten the feeling if you see a cockroach passing by and you just don't feel like trapping it and bringing it outside, you whack, you hit it with your foot. And there's a little satisfaction that goes off inside of you. Now, maybe many of you are going to say, oh, no, I can't kill a cockroach. Or if there's a mosquito who's kind of biting you and you go after the mosquito, what's that part of you that says that goes beyond, you know, as the Buddhists would say, you know, sentient beings? Well, you know, enough sentience. I remember I had an experience once. I was on a beach, and it was in, I think, the island of Jamaica, and it was early in the morning, and a fly came by, and it started biting me. And I said, I was laying on the beach, I said, I refuse to kill anything. I will not kill anything. I am here. I am joined with God. I'm laying on a beach, and I was 27 years old. And so this mosquito comes in, a mosquito, a fly, comes by, and it bites me again. And I refuse. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to karma. I mean, I don't want this karma. I'm going to be, and I'm going to be. Comes the third time, I whack it. And I obviously, I get it. It's so filled with my blood, the thing was. And it falls into the sand, and now I'm feeling remorseful because I have this big value at the time. So I dig a grave in the sand, and I bury it, put a little stick on top of it, and I wave goodbye to the fly. I was 27 years old, you know, Carlos Castaneda, you know, all this stuff was there in my mind. And then all of a sudden, I see a little movement in the sand, and the fly comes up. Obviously, I only knocked it out, and it flies away. And I thought to myself, as I had killed, I said, now you're going to go on to your next incarnation, you know, believing that that's what happens with reincarnation. And I thought to myself, imagine what it's like. Imagine being a fly and then dying and coming back as a fly. I said, that didn't sound, it blew my mind. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille, much more mature now. What about you? What about your own sense of your own brutality? How many times did you haul off and whack your son or daughter and you just, or you held your hand back and you couldn't stop yourself or joined in a crowd? How many of you have been in the march to Washington or in a riot, in the middle of a riot? How many of you have been a part of it? Let's not just talk about those of you who are against it. Let's talk about those of you who have felt it. Felt the bug, felt that thing that says hurt something else. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I find this discussion rather interesting. I would like to begin, and I think one of the things of these questions, you have to put them in historical context, all right?
Well, wait, what I was asking, and I'm hoping you could do this for me, is not to put them in historical context because that's too intellectual. I wanted to know about you. Did you ever hurt anybody?
No.
Never, ever, in your whole life, you never hurt anybody?
No, I never hurt a fellow human being.
Never. What about your brother?
Okay. First of all, human nature.
Well, what about your brother?
No. I don't have a brother. I just like to say what I have to. I'm not really up for the pop psychology because you really don't.
Oh, I'm not pop, you know. I'm a real professional. I've been doing this for 40 years. I mean, this is not just pop stuff.
Okay.
But what I was asking was to get people to kind of do more than philosophical statements.
Yeah, but these questions have to, at some point, try to be put into some context.
Go ahead. Do it. I see you're dying to do it. Give us a context.
All right. One. Human beings are social by nature, thus they're actualized in society. All right? Two, there's a dialectical relation between ideology and psychology. All right? And that takes place within social interests. Like when those people pretend to be prisoners, or when those young people were taken away from resources that had scarce resources. So that's where the nature of brutality comes in, to maintain or to rationalize a social order. If we take it outside of those contexts, it leads to esoteric philosophizing. And you really won't get into any insight as a practitioner of the discipline. You understand what I'm saying?
It's what we're doing now. It's the esoteric philosophizing, right? Because we're taking it out of the context.
Yeah, well, I think if you set up a paradigm, it helps. Because it all tends to evaporate, right, where it becomes irrelevant or not relevant to any science.
Well, I think that's really important. You know, what's your name?
Osei, O-S-E-I.
O-S-E-I. Oh, I've spoken to you before.
Probably, yes.
O-S-E-I, yes, I have, with great respect, and I thank you for your intelligent observations. I'm going to move on and take some other callers, because there are people I know who wanted to talk about their personal experience with this. I think might be really helpful for them. Okay, Osei? And thank you very much for calling in. Thank you. We're going to take another caller. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209-2900. Let's see, T-Dub. Hello.
How are you?
Hi, who is this?
This is Peter.
Peter, could you lower your radio?
It's off right now.
Okay, good, good. Sometimes we just have this little feedback.
Oh, I see. There's like the delay or whatever you call it.
Yes. Hi, Peter.
Good. How are you?
Good. Tell me about your own experience with this.
I'm actually experiencing it at this moment. Well, I mean, I've come to the realization of certain things that are happening.
Tell me about it.
The ruthlessness, and like you were saying, the desensitizing of people.
Are you without ruth? That's ruthless.
Oh no, I'm not that type.
You're not that type. No. But you mean you're kind of a part of a system, and you're feeling the ruthlessness of the people around you.
Yeah.
And you're caught in the middle of it. Doesn't it make you angry?
yeah, it does make me angry. You know, I'm trying to understand why, you know, why this is happening, why these people are this way. You know, what are they gaining from it?
And so you're trying to understand, and you're part of a you want to tell me exactly what's going on?
Where should I start?
It's
well,
a big
deal,
huh?
I was going through like a depression, and I wasn't caring about too much, and associating with people, you know, that are kind of like, you know, out for themselves type. And let's see, how can I bring this around?
Well, I tell you, maybe we got to move it a little quicker because
I have a number
of people waiting, Peter. But here's what I'm going to ask you. So at one point, you were part of it. At one point, you were hanging out with a group of people who were all kind of taking care of themselves.
Right.
And then suddenly, you became the victim of it.
Exactly. I think, you know, I like drug abuse and that type of thing. You become so desensitized, like you don't care, you know, you're not really thinking about what you're doing, you just going after yourself. And you know, with technology and all of this new information that's coming out and new abilities to do things, it's very dangerous, I think.
Yeah, you know? I think the
technology is like so far ahead of us, you know, maybe there's only a certain percentage of people that really know how to handle it. And if the wrong people start handling it, it could be big problems.
It's another form of tyranny.
Right.
I agree with you. Thank you, Peter. Thank you for calling.
I'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. You know, it's heated. I mean, it's really heated. We all, in many ways, feel like victims, and sometimes we all feel like saviors. Many people want to be saviors to the rest of the world and point out the evils that are there. Others, you know, feel like the victims of the stuff that's out there. But the part that I'm asking you to recognize is that you're also the person doing it, that you got it inside you, you know? 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there. Hello there. You're on the air. We're doing magical engineering here today.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
Good. Who is this?
Chonay Sue.
Chonay Sue?
Correct.
Nice. Hi there.
Hi. Yeah, I was listening to the call, and I guess my brutality has came when the most recent one is spanking my child, disciplining my child. And I don't think I enjoy it, but my thought at the time is always, if I make it hurt bad enough, that I won't have to do it so often.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, it's kind of the thinking that a lot of us had. But, you know, here's what happens with it, Chumesu. What happens is it does get an energy of its own. It seems like a rationalization, spanking, criticizing, hurting. You know, it seems that way. And I wish I could get people on air who say, you know, I want to thank my father for spanking me because it made me a good person, and now I feel like a happy person. I have never met a one person who has been the result of somebody who was disciplined in a physical way who's ever been okay. So since I haven't met anybody who's okay, I figure, well, you know, even though this has gone on for centuries and centuries, it must not be the exact right idea. So
well,
if it's the... were you a part of the discipline? Did you get it when you were a kid?
Yeah, of course I got spanking, and it was always doing something wrong. And I know when, like you cited, when you're in school that you got spanked, and when I was in school, too, if you did something wrong, you know, usually it was the male teacher, even if you had a female teacher, she might call the male teacher and the gym teacher to come to the room to hit you with the paddle. And, you know, that happened, and it seemed like there was more discipline in the schools then.
So you liked your school where you got paddled by the teachers. You thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I still today I think it's a good idea. Of course, I didn't think it then, but I know that there was discipline then. And then they come up with the idea that no teacher can spank a child. And now there's a lot of disruption in the schools.
Well, so here's what we're saying.
A lot of discipline.
I hear what you're saying, Chonesu. Yeah. Chonesu. I think what you're saying is helpless. We are powerless, and when we feel powerless in able to get a child, our child, to perform in the way that we think is right, when we are powerless, that's when we go to the stick. That's when we go to hurting them. That's when we go to spanking them. So we have one of two things we could do. We could either enforce discipline through punishment, or we could figure out what is it that makes us so powerless. Maybe we don't have another way, you know? Maybe there's another way of dealing with the child, because most disobedient children are showing frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we just don't know enough how to deal with children yet so that we're not getting them in this frustrated place where they have to be anti-disciplinarian, and therefore they call on people like you to discipline them. If you had another way to get your son or daughter to perform better, I'm sure you'd do it. I'm sure if somebody said to you, you know, give them a cherry candy and watch what happens. And if you gave them a cherry candy and suddenly they obeyed, you'd say, well, that's a much better answer.
Yeah, you use cherry candy all the time. You know, he's 12 now.
Yeah.
And I realized that even with the spanking, it does help for a while, but his memory seems to fade.
Yeah.
And he'll repeat, even if he believes he's going to get a spanking, he'll still repeat something that he knows he shouldn't do.
Yeah, well, there's a special thing that happens around this time of year for him, about this time, since he's 12 and he's going through his pubescence.
Right.
Almost all of his energy is going to get fixated on never being overpowered again. And so this is when the kids sometimes slip into doing things that are harmful to other people so they could feel power. So
well,
maybe
know,
it's time, maybe it's time, you know, for you to lay back with your son and say, look, it's enough. Just
well,
a memory.
Know,
maybe I'll show you a memory of the old paddle. But it's enough. We're not going to do it that way anymore. From here on in.
Well, actually, I have had that discussion with him. I said, well, you know, you're 12 now. And, you know, it's time for me not to have to spank you for, you know, for this being disobedient.
Yeah, but so you see, it's not something he needs to do. It's something you need to do. You got to make the decision in your mind, because he's not going to necessarily follow it. You know, sometimes kids who have been beaten all of their lives look for the beating because they think of it as a form of love. Right. I've seen many of people who are love whips and chains for that very reason, because they say, well, that's the way my daddy loved me. So you can't leave it to them to determine. It's really up to you to determine. I've got to be a bigger man than this. I'm going to find my cherry candy.
Yeah.
For my
son. I have told him, listen, you know, maybe the day after thinking that, you know, your daddy loved you, but I can't allow you to be disrespectful.
Yeah. So when's the last time you took him out to do something with you and him alone?
Well, usually we go as a family.
I know. When's the last time you went out with him alone?
It's been a while.
How long?
Maybe, I'm just guessing, maybe.
2 years.
A year or two.
That's what I think. Yeah. I think it's been 2 years, and I think here's your job. Take your son out alone, and now he's going to be the job of the century. This is going to be something that's going to be so hard to do that when you do it, Chonaisu, you're going to call me back, and you're going to say, Armand, that was the toughest thing I ever did in my life, but I'm so glad I did it. Well, go on. Now, here's what you're going to do. You're going to take him out, you and him. You're going to go somewhere away from the family. You're going to take a day trip. You're going to take a drive that's going to take you at least 2 hours to get there.
2 hours?
2 hours. Something that takes you 2 hours to get there, and then you're going to hang out with him for 4 or 5 hours.
You know, I know.
Just let me finish, and I'll tell you what I think. Okay. You know, my job is solving family problems.
Okay.
And then when you get there, he is your job. You cannot give advice. You are not allowed to advise him about anything.
Okay.
Not allowed. Not one word. You can't say to him, you know, you better wear a good jacket. Okay. You know, you better do this. You better do that.
Okay.
And you try that on as a discipline. And I promise you, if you give yourself one day with a number of hours with your son alone, you probably never have to discipline him again.
Why drive 2 hours?
Because you have to get away from the rest of your family.
Okay. Okay.
You have to get really away. It has to mean, I love you, son. It has to feel like, I love you, son. I want to be with you.
Okay.
All right? He'll never forget it, you know.
I got it.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Can I make one other point?
Sure.
Well, this is a brutality in another way. I was, at one point in my life, I was a car salesman. And as a car salesman, I made my money by commission. And the less knowledgeable people is where I made my most money, because they wouldn't bargain. You tell them this is the price on the sticker, and then they ask for a discount, and you give them a little discount, and they say, okay, I'm going to buy this car. But another person comes into the dealership, and they're very knowledgeable about buying a car, and they go to, you know, 20 places and negotiate the price before they bought a car.
So let me see. We're getting right down to the end of the show. You're saying in your own way what you would feel when you would do this, and you would just feel exploitive because you know a person could get a better bargain.
Correct.
You know, and in a way, you felt guilty while you were doing it. Because you know what I realized about you, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
I realize you're a very just man. Mm-hmm. You're a perfectionist. You're somebody who has a real set of what's right and what's wrong. And when you live the wrong way, it really kills you. And when you see your son living the wrong way, it's almost like it's an imperfection of you.
Correct.
Yes, you're one of these people in this world who are going to try to do it right.
Correct.
And I'm glad you're there.
Okay.
Spare the rod. Love your child.
All right.
I'll speak to you again.
Yeah,
thank you.
Appreciate.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's tough. It's tough because when you look inside yourself, you know, funny things happen with child beating. At one point, you start to like it, but you don't even know it. You get into the swing of it. It takes over. And at this point, there's no longer any good being done. It's just harm. And it's just something that's going to be repeated. Because that kid's going to go up and say, wait till I have my own power. And then they're going to do it too. So it's not hard. It's not easy. But I do recommend something to all of you. If you find yourself out of control with your own need to hurt people, and you'd like to do something about it, you know, try to check in with some counselors or something. Try to shake up your mind a little bit. Let's try to find an alternative. You know, sometimes you need therapy. Sometimes you need to talk to somebody. Sometimes just feeling so alone in this world makes it impossible for you to get through. So find somebody. Hey, listen, if you want a copy of today's show, you would call my office at 212-757-4488, but you could also get it for free on the internet by going to thepositivemind.com and pressing the button, and you could find the archives, including this program, so you could do it one way or another. And you do check in with the website. It's called The Positive Mind. And if you want to send me an email, please, I'll be happy to help you with whatever you've got. It's Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at brainlink.com, B-R-A-I-N-L-I-N-K.com. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friend. Special thanks to T-Dub for engineering in place of Michael G., who's on a heroic mission today. Back with you on Tuesday, my friends.